Thank you so much for inviting me to be with you once again. I truly miss this fellowship. This morning, I want to invite you to think about a pilgrimage. Consider what our reading suggested, the river calling and the sound of life cursing all around you. Pilgrimage is one option amidst this swift movement, one that has the possibility of helping each of us to make some sense out of this adventure in living. Consider the unexpected. There are two definitions of pilgrim in the Oxford English Dictionary. The first one offered states that a pilgrim is a stranger, a wanderer, a wayfarer. The second definition states that a pilgrim is one who journeys usually a long distance to some sacred place as an act of religious devotion. The first of these captures a direction anyone could undertake. The second is the one I set out on 10 years ago today during these very same November days. However, after my journey, I learned that the first definition was really the most important one. I didn't have to walk 523 miles on an ancient path in order to feel and accept feeling at home with myself as well as with others. I began my pilgrimage wanting and needing a spiritual experience, which I had. And at its end, I discovered that very experience can be sought, found, and held onto wherever I am. Accepting the transitory nature of all things is to let go. Accepting less than perfection is accepting the brokenness in ourselves as well as the brokenness in others. Pilgrimage can mean not having to do more, but rather to do less, letting go. When we are able to subtract clutter and compulsions and judgments, we can be more present to now. And speaking of now, phew, I think we can all agree that the present time holds an excessive amount of political and social unrest, fear, uncertainty, hatred, and a great deal of divisiveness across our land. There's such a strong need to create opportunities to move away from this toxicity, move away from patterns of commonality and daily barrage of hatred and chaos that we are so much part of and hear about. We can alter our routines of living. We can change it up a little. We need a reset button for our time. Unencumbered with specific expectations and predictions, letting go of what weighs one down allows us to empty out regrets, resentments, anger, prejudice, and fears. Moving loosely between controlling and letting go welcomes a new adventure. Someone said, go out on a limb, that's where the fruit is. Julian of Norwich said, all shall be well and all shall be well and all manner of things shall be well. A biblical passage, Corinthians 5 verse 7 says, cleanse out the old leaven that you may be fresh dough. These suggest approaching what's ahead as something positive to create, something positive to work on with our hands, our feet, our eyes, and our hearts. When we subtract emotional and material clutter routine compulsions, and all those judgments that we're so likely to jump towards, we can be more present to now, to the right here moments of now. Like our Unitarian Universalist ancestors of old, we need to search in our souls for deep yearnings. Now, you each know we have these very lofty principles to affirm and promote: compassion, interdependence, a search for truth and meaning, spiritual growth, justice, democracy, and respectfulness. These are part of our religion and can make a difference in who we are and who we want to be. We join together in worship to remind ourselves of our values and to help us balance these grand goals. I'm suggesting a pilgrimage can also do the same. A journey into the unknown can offer insight and wisdom, renewal, and perseverance. With the river continually moving, where could you choose to wander? Where would you reach beyond the familiar and experience the unknown? Could it be inviting a neighbor with a Trump sign still in her yard for a walk? Or perhaps serving food on Christmas Day to a homeless family? Maybe it would be volunteering with children from families with a different color, social class, sexual orientation, language. Or maybe beginning a new spiritual practice for yourself in your own home. Well, enough of my possible preaching of pilgrimage for each of you and suggestions that were included. Let me now share my life-changing pilgrimage. I set out to celebrate retirement as well as challenge myself physically, emotionally, and spiritually. I wanted a new adventure. I planned to walk alone with a 10 or 12 pound pack on my back, my sleeping bag and yoga mat attached. I carried my US passport, my pilgrim passport, one debit card, a money belt with about $20 or $30 for each day, a change of clothing, an extra pair of shoes, a towel, and a few toiletries. I didn't have a phone, a compass, or a watch. The pilgrimage trail I chose is called the Way of St. James, or Camino de Santiago. Its route begins in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port in France, near the border with Spain, and stretches across northern Spain to its final destination, Santiago de Compostela, in the corner of the northwest Spain country where St. James is presumably buried. It's an ancient pilgrimage route that was popular and formed in 1000 to 1300 AD. Its long history as a Christian pilgrimage has deep spiritual significance. Now, when I set out, I wasn't certain I'd walk the whole trail, and crossing the Pyrenees the first day, which was very warm, was difficult and affirmed my aim to let my journey unfold at a foot traveler's pace in its own way and in its own time. I followed the sun west toward Santiago for 33 days, averaging 14 to 16 miles a day, through the varied and ever-changing fall landscape. This single holy route going in one direction passes through cities and towns, villages, rivers, meadows, orchards, farmlands, graveyards, and ancient landmarks. When I was there that decade ago, 250,000 pilgrims from 138 nationalities registered for the pilgrimage. The majority, including myself, stayed at pilgrim hostels called albergues. They often had no heat and no hot water, and sometimes not even toilet paper in the all-gender bathrooms. We'd sleep in these bunk beds outfitted for anywhere between 4 to 75 people in one room. Bed bugs and smelly socks and loud snoring were all part of the experience. It wasn't often very comfortable, but it was always unique. There were about 70, 75 folks walking the trail when I walked. The majority were men. There were people of all ages and even three children. I was the oldest person I met on the trail. I kept asking people. Some walked alone. Many, like myself, chose to walk with others at times. There was a mixture of social and economic status. There was no common religion or common motivation among the group, but there was a deep sense of equality and camaraderie. Being weary and being concerned with our feet was part of what we shared. But our commonest commonality was the context of being pilgrims. We shared friendships, and I'm still in touch with four international pilgrim friends. We shared meals together, cooking together. We shared encouragement. We also shared personal stories we'd never dream of telling aloud. It wasn't possible to be lonely on the trail. Solitude was accessible anytime, but not loneliness. Compassion flowed freely among us. It seemed we knew that our walk through history, following the well-traveled footsteps left by millions of souls, was a walk that was profoundly sacred, left there by millions of souls. In so much fresh air and beautiful natural landscape, with very little carried on our backs, it was easy to clear the mind of clutter, to observe ourselves as well as to observe others. Against the backdrop of this profound path, I learned a lot on the trail, how to ask for help, which wasn't my custom, how to trust the journey, new learning, how to accept the difficulties of the walk. The terrain kept changing. It was steep and flat and rugged and rocky and hot and cold and rainy and breathtakingly beautiful. Twice I rested for a full day and went to a museum, attended a wonderful church service, found a lot of fresh vegetables and nuts to gorge on, and took hour-long baths at a modest hotel. The main task each day on the trail was to find adequate food and shelter. Very simple. This left me with ample time to clear my head, notice my many blessings, and take care of myself. There were also times of uncertainty and exhaustion. Was I on the right path after crossing that last river? Would the rain ever let up? Would I find some protein for dinner? But there were many times of joy and unexpected pleasures. Once, while walking alone, I stopped in a bar and coffee shop combo, and the proprietor, seeing how weary I was, called an elderly woman in the back who came forward towards me and insisted I follow her with lots of gesturing. She took my hand finally and with her key opened a small church and gestured for me to sit, to pause, and to pray. There was another time when I was off the trail, lost in the hills, sort of blissed out at that time, and it was dusk. Hearing a dog barking drew me towards a cluster of homes with a closed bar. The neighbors saw me coming and began to gather around me, chatting and smiling and laughing and looking at the shell that each of us carried, and patting me all over, patting my back, patting my backpack, looking at my yoga mat. And after they opened the bar for me, brought me food, drink, and a blanket, I ate and I slept there and had a very peaceful evening. In the morning, I was escorted back onto the Camino de Santiago with three children and six adults accompanying me. I found the Spanish people were overwhelmingly respectful of pilgrims. In some towns, the nuns ran the albergues, the hostels, and when I stayed there, I could be fortified with a clean mattress, a worship service in the evening with singing and candles, music, and then tea and singing to wake me at 7 a.m. in the morning. Step by step, I was continually sustained by kindness. The unknown wilderness became more and more comfortable, and it gave me strength. I met myself over and over again. I gained more trust and confidence in myself and felt a kinship with nature. This is very satisfying to a religious naturalist like myself. At its end, I found myself again blissfully happy, although I was diagnosed and treated for bronchitis 2 days before finishing the trail. I had walked for 4 days in rain previous to that. It was overall a self-centering experience that manifested gratitude, reverence, and compassion while nurturing an open heart, faith, and most importantly for me, hope. The shell that I referred to, we got to choose when we got our passport as a pilgrim, and we carried this with us. I hung mine from my backpack. Others had theirs near their belt, their money belt in front. And it wasn't until the end of the journey that I really understood the meaning of this shell. It's linked to the goddess Venus, who represents birth and regeneration. So returning earlier, my friends, to the charge that I invited you on, where would you go to meet the holy? What opportunities for enhancing your life await you in the days and years ahead? How can you uncover the sacred in difficult times, in transitions, in the unknown? Even a small journey can bring us closer to the spirit of life, to nature, to God, to creative mystery. You don't even have to leave the beautiful Skagit Valley to do so. Life itself is a journey, and perhaps it's as simple as responding responsibly and sacredly to life. What was demanded of me on my particular journey and is still demanded of me today is faith, adaptability, physical and emotional strength, courage, stamina, perseverance, and some foolishness. Those years ago, I experienced greater patience, a daily acknowledgement of the sacredness of nature, a stronger spiritual practice, and an appreciation of life's abundant and simple gifts. Now, what is demanded of me is very much the same: to carry on, to take the road ahead, to walk into the unknown, to renew hopefulness. Join me as together we walk onward. Amen.